to the Sun City. Welcome to the Sun City. Welcome to the Sun City.
Sun City, make some noise.
From Alameda to Trans Mountain, down up in the Joe Battle. Better be prepared to meet these crazy ass Texas rattles. It's a battle, so tighten up your horse's saddle. Never leave my destiny up to a swing of a judge's gavel. Down to Juaritos, where the body count rises daily. Respect the streets, cause they made me and they always pay me. No te chiando, a nosotros no nos vale madre. No get too close, I'll knock you out like I was Escalante.
What up? Chuka Talks number 20.
Oh, hello, would help if I turn off my mic, huh?
Rookie move.
Damn.
Hello. Oh, you're getting there. So we're here at Corner Tavern and Grill again, less than 24 hours later, because some of us were here yesterday enjoying a few drinks and footballing and stuff like that.
JB especially, that picture on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. We got to repost that.
Yeah. Tore up.
I've never seen a better duck face.
It wasn't a duck face. Oh. He thinks he was doing a duck face.
Oh, it was the one.
He was
duck
slouched
face.
Over drooling on Tim.
It was like a goose face?
Yeah, it was a goose face.
Yeah, it looks like a goose face.
Goose face.
Yeah, so we're here at Corner Tavern and Grill, 2700 North Mesa at Cincinnati. Essentially on the corner, obviously, of Mesa and Cincinnati. And definitely join us for some drink specials. They've got $2 Los Equis pints during all the NFL games. And then tonight at 6 for the Colts and Broncos game, they've got $3 Crown.
Woo!
I can't do liquor right now. I did enough last night, so. Liquor and beer, stay over here. We're just doing the show today.
I didn't see any pictures of you on Facebook, though, looking real lit up.
I avoided the camera. I know.
Did you?
I was. Yeah, I was successful in doing that, apparently, because there aren't any pictures of me.
Damn.
At least Corner Tavern pictures. That was a mess.
At least you didn't rip your pants. Yeah. Doing the worm on the floor, huh?
Yeah, that wasn't last night. No, that was another night. Woo! And speaking of being here at Corner Tavern, we also have an awesome guest here with us today, Mr. Peter Schwarzbein. What's up, dude?
How's it going?
It's going great.
That's such a sexy radio voice.
Thank you for inviting me.
So sexy. That's
got a little Barry White action going
on.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of a flu mixed with the Sunday afternoon at Corner Tavern.
Oh, I like it.
That's that vice.
I like it.
Is that
it.
The combo?
Yeah, it's deadly.
All right, well, we'll keep you over there on that side of the tables.
Well, he can come closer.
He can come a little closer
if he wants to, the voice and everything. Just whisper softly into my ear.
Sweet nothings.
Sweet nothings.
Sweet trolley nothings in your ear.
Oh, please. Let's make that a poem, a haiku or something.
It's a way of life.
Snap. But yeah, speaking of sweet trolley somethings, hopefully not nothings. Peter Schwarzbein is one of the guys that helped kind of get the whole trolley, or the guy that got the whole trolley initiative kind of moving, right?
Yeah, there's many people. I think this has probably been a 40-year odyssey to see the streetcars come back into running again in El Paso. I've been fortunate enough to have spearheaded the latest movement, and I think what's different is that it agitated not only community support, but political support and will as well. And with that combination, it's looking like we're going to be able to see the streetcar line run again.
Yeah, it's definitely getting there. When would you say, how long ago were your efforts started? It was a few years back, right?
So the excuse me. The first inkling that I started with this project was probably in February of 2010. I was completing my master's of fine arts in New York City, and I was a little bit frustrated with the, the current sort of contemporary art, fine art scene. Lots of people wanted to go into galleries after graduating from my program. And nobody was really clear about who would get selected and why this photographer, why this painter was selected in this gallery. There's no real reason outside of maybe some collector collected them. And if the market was going to sort of control that, I wouldn't want to have anything part of it. So I was looking into actually focusing in on creative direction and advertising after school. So I was looking to do a project that could kind of combine those interests of sort of fine art and contemporary art with advertising and kind of a disruptive sort of advertising sense. And in doing that, I kind of stumbled upon this project. I've heard about the streetcars. I think I was just Google searching like El Paso, and they come up, and I wanted to do a project that could root itself in El Paso, but also serve as a way to explain what it means to be from El Paso. Being in New York and have been on the East Coast since I graduated high school, there was a tremendous amount of misconceptions about what the border meant. And in 2010, when the violence was almost at its height, I thought it was important to create a project that could imagine a better future for the two communities, or for the two cities in one community, and also seek to explain what it meant to be from here. And the trolley kind of did that. So in February, I started developing these posters. I started, think tanking the entire campaign. If I was going to do an art project that was an advertising project, it had to work within the framework of an ad campaign. So
that explains the poster.
So all of a sudden it's like, all right, well, if this is going to be an ad campaign, what does it need? Well, it needs to be posters. It needs commercials in Spanish and English. It needs a mascot. It needs that entire universe to be created for it to make the unbelievable as real as possible. So I came up with Alex, the trolley conductor, the border's newest hero, who is a mascot for border crossing. I came up with this logo that you can find on t-shirts and hats, bumper stickers, which shows the happiest trolley you've ever seen in your life.
It looks pretty cheery there.
It's happier than Thomas, the engine train.
We don't like to talk about Thomas. Uncle Tomas, as I like to refer to him as. But you have the Franklin Mountains, you have the star on the mountain as well, and the sort of trolley's ejecting itself through that star space. And just tried to make the unbelievable as real as possible. That summer of 2010, I came down with a friend from New York. We went on a spirit quest of sorts and spent about a week going through southern New Mexico and El Paso. And we ended up putting up the posters that you've seen around downtown. I got permissions from some property owners and decided to do the project as real as I can. And I learned a lot along the way as an art project. And one of the things that I learned was that a public art project, whether it's through the functions of wheat paste and street art or a traditional advertising sort of thing, or even a mural, the public is in dialogue with it, and the public goes back and forth. And some people may understand of what you're doing is political in nature, or may understand that this is really something that is supposed to be art and is supposed to meant to be a conversation starter and a dialogue piece. Other people, you know, in El Paso took it literally and saw these black and white posters of a smiling trolley conductor and said, that's crazy. Why would they want to put a trolley like the city's, you know, the city's, what are they up to again? Mm-hmm. And so that was really interesting to have done a project where I had to negotiate those worlds. And it was very different than some of my other peers because their work was really based within a studio practice. They were making photographs or images or pieces that really were them in the studio and dealt more with theory and dealt more with ideas. And not that mine didn't deal with ideas, but it really interjected itself into the real world. And I really wanted the work to exist and have an impact in the real world. Fast forward to 2011 in June, I graduate school. You know, I spent a year putting up those posters. We did a campaign launch in front of the greenery. I have some Polaroids here from that. This is not a Polaroid. That's
pornography.
That's another time.
That's a pornographic material.
You guys can see some of this is Alex, the trolley conductor. We had a cutout. You could get your picture taken.
Yeah, I remember this.
You know, and I did a Kickstarter at the time. Actually, fundraised about $4,000 to fly the trolley conductor down, create the signage, and just try to make this as real as possible. I actually think I worked with your friend Chad too on he was DP for some of the commercials that I shot as well.
Oh, okay.
Cool. So
very awesome.
It was a lot of fun. And when I graduated school, it felt like there was some momentum there. with the project. At least people were.
So this was a project.
It was my thesis project.
Okay,
at,
cool.
I mean, at first it started as my thesis project for graduate school.
Yeah. Because I didn't know. I was kind of like under the impression that maybe it was after you had finished school. So pretty cool. No. So it started there,
and I was going. Yeah, I was going. I was coming home about maybe once every month. Going into a lot of student loan debt, and came back in July. Wanted to see how far the project could go. My mom also had hurt herself as well, so it was. She's fine now, but you know, at the time she'd broke her ankle, so she needed somebody to help her schlep around town. And I also was invited to do an installation at Chocolate Block. And so that was like, all right, well, I have 2 months to go and do a project. I'll help my mom take a little breather from New York for a little bit. And just ended up staying now for what's now three years. And when I did the project for Chocolate Block, it was an opportunity to work within that framework of dialogue. And I started these to create this mosaic called Faces of the Frontera. You've probably seen it. It's a black and white poster, about 2,000 portraits in Juarez, El Paso, and Las Cruces, that ended up forming the shape of a streetcar. And that was a way to look at representation, right? People, especially from the outside, want to define what it means to be from here. And they're insistent on pointing out the fence, and they're insistent on pointing out this is where one country ends, one begins. And for me, and I think a lot of people of our generation, we actually reject that sort of binary relationship, that it's not that this is either Mexico or the United States, but it's both and something different. And to show the faces, to actually just represent who's from Juarez, El Paso, and Las Cruces, it's very hard to tell who's actually from those places when you actually come down to it. And that project was a catalyst to keep me here. And then when I was here, I was also invited to be on a San Jacinto redesign committee that was chaired by Nestor Valencia. There was about four other citizens there as well. And a lot of the recommendations we had with San Jacinto Plaza were incorporated in the final design. For example, the Keep the Lagartos in the center, the balustrades that you see from the 1920s, those white columns, are now going to be included in the final design, unless they screwed it up. and also keeping it as a plaza. You know, traditional plazas that you see all the way from Santa Fe down to Chile have at least four ways to get in and out, if not eight. And some of the older plans had none of that. You know, one was like an arroyo that just went through the middle of town, which is certainly nice, but not for the heart of our town. But in this project, one of the things that the group recommended was to have a streetcar cafe, utilizing one of the old streetcars. And it was, committee did it, the city voted on it. You know, you can go to council records. They clearly voted 6-2 in favor of a streetcar cafe. And when it came to, like, I think it was January, February of 2012, they released the final plans. And there was no plans for a streetcar cafe. There was a cafe, and there was, like, a red box. And so we asked, well, what happened? What happened to the streetcar? You know, council voted on it. You can't just ignore what council votes on. And Jane Chang, who is the deputy city manager of transportation, said, oh, those cars can't be used for a restaurant, let alone used for anything. They're too old. And besides, the city is trying to sell them. And so I said, you know, that's not right. We own those streetcars. They might be sitting in the desert dying, the ones that went between El Paso and Juarez, but they're ours. And they shouldn't just be sold in the middle of the night. So myself and some others put our thinking caps on, and there was during this time was the quality of life bonds, right? And they were calling for comment cards from citizens, right? So if you wanted a pool on the Far East Side, you could write Olympic sized pool, or you wanted a skate park in your neighborhood in Coronado Heights, you could have had that, or you want a baseball field or a soccer stadium and that sort of thing. So they were collecting these comment cards, and what we did was we tried to basically see how much we could sort of disrupt the system by using it. So we started collecting, we printed out our own comment cards, same exact format as all of them, except that we had pre-typed out, what do you want to see? An Oregon streetcar corridor based upon a plan that the city had previously. What it, you know, how's it going to help with downtown? It's going to cut down on drunk driving. It's going to increase property, property taxes. It'll help facilitate growth in downtown. Why is it important? You know, it's an ability to celebrate our history and culture here, and it could help generate residential and mixed use growth. And so we collected these, and at the end of the day, we had about 1,800 signatures of people from the comments. The same process that I did when I went to places, set up a backdrop and photographed people, we utilized that towards these comment cards. So we went to go and meet people at UTEP or at La Parada or at art openings or at parks. And because of the previous awareness of the streetcars and, you know, the photographs that I had done and some of the other stuff, people really like into it. They really like the idea of it. And all we were trying to do was A, to get the city to stop selling them, and B, to try to get them included on the bonds. You know, at the time it was estimated to be a $90 million streetcar line mm-hmm. to connect UTEP and downtown. Mm-hmm. I, like many others, thought that that would be a great project. Still think it would be a great project, but why not let the citizens vote on it? You know, what's really fascinating about the streetcars and the support that you see, of course, the loudest mouths, usually everybody hears the most, mm-hmm. but the people that by and large that support this project are multi-generational, and that's very rare to see in politics. It's very rare to see a project that a 60-year-old or a 65-year-old wants to see happen and a 26-year-old want to see happen. It's very, very rare. And mm-hmm. so to have that here and to have it for different reasons. For the 26-year-old, he wants to have a better, he wants to have a better weekend and opportunity out. He wants to see something grow. He wants to be able to have something where if he does want to live in an apartment before living in a home or something, he has a streetcar now that's going to facilitate those new apartments.
So ideally, where would the cars run from?
So ideally is not ideally. So the line that was ultimately approved by city council is going to go Baltimore down to Glory Road, to the Glory Road Transfer Center. It's going to go down Oregon Street. It's going to cross over at Franklin, right by the ballpark. Then it's going to go turn right on Kansas, right on Father Ram, stop at the Stanton Street Bridge, stop at the Santa Fe Street Bridge. Then it's going to make a right onto Santa Fe, go up Santa Fe, over Franklin again, and then up Stanton. So if you can imagine it kind of like an eight,
okay,
that's the thing there. And it's going to be an amazing trip. I mean, you literally are going to be on a car that's 85 years old. The PCC streetcars that the city of El Paso owns that are now in the desert waiting to be fixed up and reborn were personally approved by Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1935. He wanted a streetcar that could run in any temperate climate in the United States. So back in the day, we had a president that had some gumption to him. So he brought up all the four streetcar manufacturers at the time and said, this is what I want. They came up with designs and he picked it. And the PCC streetcar was the final design. And if you look at these cars up close, you know, I have a little cartoon version of it, but sorry, guys. Sorry, listeners. So you can see here that the design of this is really sort of the pinnacle of Art Deco design. Mm-hmm. It has these long flowing lines that really connote a sense of movement even when the car is still. They're really beautiful cars, and to see them fixed up, you know, in a way that San Francisco has, there is going to be a tremendous opportunity for the city to brand itself. But even without all that jargon, the reality is that your parents probably remember riding it.
Yeah.
Your grandparents might remember riding it.
Which is, I was going to say, in case some people don't know, these are cars that were here. Like you mentioned, they're in the desert because we used to have a trolley system here in El Paso and Juarez back in the day.
So a little bit about the history of the streetcars here in El Paso. El Paso has had an international streetcar line here since, an electric one since 1902. It's had a form of international international trolleys since 1880, 88 with Mandy the Mule, who's actually a mule who pulled along a trolley behind her. And there's some really interesting letters from back in the day of people who would take New Yorkers and out-of-towners out on the trolley, and Mandy would just stop. And you'd have this, you know, this uppity East Coaster be like, why aren't you telling that mule to go? And he goes, Mister, that's Mandy the Mule. She wants to take a break. I ain't going to mess with her. it's like pure Chico. It's like, pure, of course he's not going to mess with the mule. Right. Mule needs a break at noon. That's Mule's going to have a break. But the line switched to all electric in 1902. The El Paso Electric Railway Company started off this line, what we now know as the El Paso Electric Company. Yeah. The El Paso Electric Company, which is publicly traded, on the stock market, started off as the El Paso Electric Railway Company. Its fortune was the streetcars. That's how intricate this is to our history. And from 1902 to 1974 existed one of the only international streetcar lines. At the height of the line's take, there was over 63 miles of streetcar in the city of El Paso. There was a line that went out to Ysleta. There was a line that went out to Fort Bliss. There was a Manhattan Heights line, a line that went to El Paso High School, a line that went up to Kern, Kansas up to Baltimore. That was known as the Mesa Street Line. There was also a Smeltertown line that went through Sunset Heights and ended up by the Smelter where the former Sarco site is. So this was, and then of course you have the line that went to Juarez. So this was part of us. And the thing that kept our line running so long till the 70s, excuse me, was that it was a tremendous economic generator for this community. At the height of the line, there was over 500 trips a day between El Paso and Juarez. The highest grossing Woolworths in the 1960s was in El Paso, and it was directly from traffic. The highest grossing JCPenney's from 1952 to 1958, that one that's around the Stanton and San Antonio, yeah. That stopped right in front of the trolley. And so you'd have, you still see it today. Three of the highest grossing Walmarts in the country are in El Paso. You look at the outlets.
Yeah, restaurants, all kinds of things.
Yeah, restaurants. The outlets is all cash. I mean, the Mexican national consumers is one of the most important consumers we have in this region and in this city. And the streetcars are really a reflection of that. So it was a central part of what it meant to be from here. And when we lost those streetcars, we lost a part of our own history and a part of understanding ourselves. And I firmly believe that if you ever want to progress and you ever want to look into the future, you have to understand your past. The only way you know where you're going is know where you come from. And so this severance and what we're going to resever and put together again, I think is going to, generate a lot of things. I mean, I think you look at the ballpark, right? The ballpark is this opportunity where El Pasoans who have been flung out to the furthest fringes of this desert, to the far west side, the far east side, central, everywhere, right? Ballpark is where everybody meets up. Ballpark is where, you see people from different backgrounds, different high schools, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody's there having a good time and also trying to, take care of their kids and that sort of thing too. But, that's part of it as well. So we were really fortunate to have ours. The city bought them in the 1960s from National City Lines. National City Lines was a streetcar operator who was bought out by General Motors, who after World War II had started converting streetcar lines either to bus-only lines or to shut them down altogether. Now, General Motors also is in the business of making buses and is also in the business of making cars. And if you eliminate any competition for cars and buses, well, then you make your job a lot easier selling cars. And so when people go to Europe, they talk about the streetcars and they talk about the train system and how wonderful the rail is in Europe and how easy it is to get around everywhere, right? And they do that while they're stuck in traffic here with, Whataburger right by their side. Yeah. And, Europe did not have the ability to junk their streetcars because, half of Europe was destroyed in World War II, so they needed any which way to get around. And that's another part of this history that a lot of people don't know about as well. But the streetcars were a big part of what it meant to be from El Paso. And if anybody that's listening wants to ask their parents or their grandparents.
Yeah, they'll remember.
They'll remember, and they'll probably have a big smile on their face, and they'll probably remember how noisy they were, how much they banged and clanked, and how they missed that. And I think that to have an opportunity where you create another El Paso tradition, right? We have Sunday afternoons where you ride on the trolley, maybe to a ball game, or maybe just to go down to the park, maybe to go to TCBY by the Plaza Theater. You know, it's all part of that. It's all part of a larger thing. And that's been something interesting, is coming back into El Paso myself last 3 years. You know, I'd left after high school, like a lot of people did. And I think people that have stuck around and set footprints here I applaud all of them. But when I was looking at going to college, I wanted to go to someplace that I could really explore a lot of myself by being out of my comfort zone. But coming back, it's interesting to see it, because you see a situation where it's not – baseball just didn't start out of the blue, right? The stadium didn't start out of the blue. It's not kicking off any kind of downtown redevelopment. Because before baseball was the history museum and the library being redone. And before that was the Plaza Theater being redone. You know, and
it's a continuation of those efforts.
So it's a continuation, and it's not, there isn't going to be a magic bullet for it. It's all about these incremental steps in this process of investment, investing in ourselves. And when you bring those projects one after the other, then you start to build a momentum. And to me, you know, I firmly believe that the way that we'll define success with these projects is that in 10 or 20 years, there aren't 10,000 people living in downtown El Paso and the surrounding neighborhood, that there isn't a genuine ecosystem and neighborhood within the area between, you know, Paisano and I-10 and the area in between. I mean, there already is. Segundo Barrio is one of the most active and urban neighborhoods in the city. I mean, going in there is a really wonderful time. But there's an opportunity to develop and invest in other parts of our areas as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's getting there.
So what do you say to the naysayers that say, like, oh, El Paso doesn't need that. El Paso is fine without it. You know, with the baseball park, there was a lot of people in opposition of it. And with everything, like when there's progression, there's going to be people that don't want it. So what
haters.
Do you haters?
No, yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes people do have some, you know, good reasons for.
But a lot of people kind of hate on new ideas or new things.
Yeah.
So what do you say to those people to get them on board?
I think that.
And that was like a little kind of funny thing. How do you get them on board? Like literally? Yeah.
How do you get them on the trolley?
I didn't even know.
You got to check your SEO on that one. So how do you get them on board? Well, I think one of the things is to speak to people in a way that's open and in a way that places trust for them to be responsible citizens. That's easier said than done. And with the baseball stadium, for example, there's a lot of people that, you know, up until February, until the grass is there, like,
protesting.
Stadium ain't going to fit. Stadium ain't going to fit in here.
Yeah.
And, but the thing is that is to develop a system to communicate in an open and transparent way. And you can't just say from a position of authority that, well, we know it's good for you. We're going to tell you once. And if not, we're just going to not answer any more questions. And in some ways, that was kind of the pivot a little bit, right? Like the city was like, the less we actually talk about this, the better off, the less trouble we can be. It's all good, mm-hmm. right? And that was it.
It's not the way to go.
And that's not necessarily the way to go. You know, to be more open and honest about what the baseball project meant, and to be open and honest with the baseball project is that it's not about jobs that you can see here now, and it's not about an El Paso that you can see here now. It's not about seasonal jobs and selling hot dogs and popcorn. It's about offering an amenity that can attract, you know, higher wage and higher skilled jobs to this community. And part of that is fixing up parts of our areas that are important to a 40 and under demographic. And a 40 and under demographic wants to be able to have an area where they can congregate, where they can socialize, where they can enjoy themselves, and where they can work, and hopefully where they can live. And if you look at metro areas like Austin, like Miami, like Boston, like New York, even like Tucson, even like Phoenix, there's those areas that are there. And El Paso is special and unique as it is not so special and unique that we can turn our backs to that clear demographic shift that's occurring across the country. And so, what I say to the haters is, when I tell people I've come back, sometimes the people that have the hardest time understanding that I've returned, and maybe you guys get it too, they're like, why didn't you guys leave? Why don't you leave? Like, you know, you're smart, you're creative. Why don't you go to San Antonio?
Mm-hmm. Good old San Antonio.
Yeah, right. Why don't you go to Dallas or Austin, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. Right, mijo? So it's like, you know, but those people you say like, well, have you been there? Like, no. Like, I never left El Paso. So, like, how do you know it sucks here? It's like, yeah. Oh, well, I don't, you know, I, there's nothing to do here. It's like, well, what do you like doing? It's like, I like watching football. You know, like, the people that have the hardest time sometimes in seeing El Paso are those that have left never for left. A very little time yeah. or have never left at all. And the response, the way to deal with that to me, and this is me, but the way to deal that with me is not to ignore them and to say like, oh, well, whatever, like, you know, you never left, ha 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 ha. Like, to me, like, that's a double motivation to go and to try to explain to you why this is happening and to try to break it down into a way that makes sense. And oftentimes when you deal with people maybe that are a little bit older that have grandparents that left or kids that left, you know, you can break it down to them. It's like, we're doing this so that your kids don't have to leave or that your grandkids don't have to leave, mm-hmm. you know, because no, it's, they're not just going to go to, they're not just, baseball is not going to keep them there, but the kind of companies and the kind of economic infrastructure that wants to be developed here and that the kind of jobs that we want to see here need those sort of amenities. We can't just get by with like malls built from 1992. Like that's not going to cut it. And that's one of the reasons why so many people, why you had the brain drain that you did in the 80s and 90s. It's because people like myself felt like there wasn't necessarily like a lot here. And, you know, when you have people that can invest and choose not to and choose to invest by going to the Galleria Mall on a weekend or going to Vegas or whatever, rather than spending some of their hard-earned dollars here or developing an infrastructure here, like, there's a problem. You know, you can't just take from a place without putting back. And there's plenty of people that do put back, and I don't want to make it sound like there aren't people that are established that are part of, you know, the economic engine of the city, and they haven't given back. There's plenty of really amazing philanthropists and really amazing people that give to this community, give to UTEP and give to Texas Tech and give to downtown. But there has to be a point where it's understood as a responsibility, and we all have our ways to chip in.
Amen.
True that.
True that. Preach.
Every word of it.
Yep.
Very cool. So before we close out, always running out of time. Before we close out, how's the situation looking now? Because
so where we are
now? It was on the bond. Bond was approved. I know there was a hiccup or two.
It was never on the bond. That was the funniest part. We got the most votes for any bond project, but they never went with it because they said it was a transit project and because they wanted the baseball.
So it got switched out. But then there was some funding that was allotted to it, right?
So what happened was, is how much time do we have? 5 minutes?
We got a couple of minutes. Yeah.
So what happened was, is after the bond, they, it didn't go, but certain city representatives were able to go to TxDOT and literally hold up the bonds and say, this is how much support we have for this project here, right? And this is just, you know, this is one guy that did this, but there's clear support for this, multi-generational support. And TxDOT, who has some people in key places that are from El Paso, like Ted Houghton said, said, all right, if you guys build out the plan, right, the shovel, get it shovel ready, right? Environmental analysis, alternatives analysis, the whole thing to make this thing a reality. If you have the money, you put in the $5 million to make the study, 4.7, we'll come in with $90 million from our side to build it. And that was approved in That plan was finished in 2013. Ted was not able to put the money in at 2013. And a lot of people got frustrated because they're like, you know, they could spend $4.7 million on a study for this fantasy trolley project, but there's potholes in my yard. But a year later, after some of the hullabaloo went down, Ted was able to procure the money, $97 million in total for the streetcar line. And the way he was able to do that was there was a $2.1 billion multimodal transportation package for the Texas Department of Transportation. Think about this. The Texas Department of Transportation, right? King of all highways, right? The state would be with the most highways out of any. Said publicly and on the record that the future of Texas cannot be through highways and paving alone. It has to be done through multimodal investment. Rail, freight rail, and passenger rail. So to kick start off that vision and to maintain it in other places, there's $2.1 billion set aside for multimodal transportation projects. For an investment of research into a high-speed corridor between Austin and Dallas, great. For Houston to continue expanding their metro streetcar line, great. For Austin to buy 4 new light rail cars for their line so they could stay up later, great. And tucked into that was $97 million for the El Paso streetcar project. So because Ted was in that position to do that, that's how it happened. And there's some people, and they're you'll hear them, you know, yapping away that we can't afford it, that this money could be used for widening a highway on Montana or this and that and the other. A lot of it has to do with that they weren't there at the table, and they also couldn't bring that bacon down. Because if you work for a transportation commission, the money that you bring in from Austin, it shows how good you're doing. And the argument that I have with the idea that, well, we can expand Spur 601 or we can expand Montana. The thing is that if we waited for every single road and highway to be fixed in this city, we would never build anything but roads. And this is an opportunity to invest in a different kind of development process for El Paso. And so I think that it's totally worth it to do that. There's a lot of investment that's going to be made in I-10 in the next 20 years, because the reality of I-10 is that it's 20 years past its expiration date. They built I-10 in the 1960s, and most highway systems expire after 30 years. The reason why we haven't been able to do anything with ours is because if they close down I-10,
shut down the city.
So why do you think they're investing so much on the loop right now? Because they have to finish a loop before they can shut down I-10. It's a long-term vision, but for so long we've been running the city on a short-term process without a long-term vision. And so I really am hopeful that, you know, that there's that this sort of longer-term vision and strategic growth process sort of keeps on running here.
Cool, dude. So when are we thinking that we're going to start seeing something
so
kind of happen, come to fruition?
The Camino Real Mobility Authority is spearheading the process of construction and management of the construction process. Sun Metro ultimately will be running the line when it's completed, but for the construction process, it's going to be done through the Camino Real Mobility Authority. They've successfully built out the Loop 375 toll roads, so this is their next biggest project. Currently, they're in the process of receiving those funds. And then it's a process of request for proposals and request for qualifications from different
vendors, services.
So, like, who's going to build the streetcars? Who's going to build the rail?
Yeah,
that kind of thing. I think that's probably happening in the next couple of months. And once those people are decided, then, you know, realistically, it could be within the next 6 months that those streetcars get yanked up out of the ground and jackhammers start coming into roads and ripping them up to put in some delicious, fresh, fixed rail.
Right? Nice.
And this might be a premature question, I guess, but is there a cost to ride yet? Have you configured that? Sorry, he's just going to blow his nose really quick. Yeah.
Need some nose blowing time here.
My SEO is way off. So I think, from an unofficial estimate, I think they're looking probably for a ridership cost between $1 to $2 per ride, which I don't think is crazy. Now, if I were in charge or I was in a position of influence outside of just being some concerned citizen activist, I would look in ways for corporate sponsorship to be able to offer free rides. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think having Saturday nights free rides from, say, 8 p.m. to 3 a.m. would be a really responsible thing. It'd be a really great way for Western Refinery, Helena Troy, Paso Electric to go and sponsor, you know, car free Saturdays.
And this free ride brought to you by Paso Electric.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like you can see it. They put up some signage there. It's a great way for PR for them. It's also a really unique opportunity. You know, maybe there's, somebody sponsors Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon rides, you know, as well. And that would be a really great opportunity to, you know, for your grandmother to come out with her grandkids and talk about what this was like taking it from Juarez into El Paso and vice versa. So there's an opportunity here that goes beyond it. But I think that they're looking to try to place it between $1 to $2. Cool. And the biggest issue that's happening now is a discussion about replica cars versus vintage street cars. Some people have the idea that using fake vintage cars is the way to go. They would be cars that would look like old cars, but be completely fake. And to me, the thing is that there is an opportunity here for a much larger PR possibility, a much larger story and narrative by us reutilizing our old historic streetcars. Texas Monthly is not going to do a 7-page article about a city that is putting in, you know, a mid-sized American city that's putting in some streetcars. They will do it on a border city that is choosing to refurbish and bring about their history back to life again. You know, that is a sellable story. That is an interesting story, and it's not making it up. It's, you know, some people's argument is that we're just doing the streetcar because that's what Oklahoma City did, or that's what Tulsa did to bring back their downtown. That's not the truth necessarily. Obviously, other cities of a comparable size have done things like this. Like, it's not just a shot in the dark. But in the case of El Paso, like, for us to go in and bring these cars back that went daily between El Paso and Juarez is a political act, and it's one that will release a tremendous amount of self-esteem. And why would you not want to invest in that? Why would you not want to have something that make us feel better about ourselves and also bring about a different way of living for our city?
Very true. History and much more. So many more questions, but we're running out of time. And we'll probably definitely hit you up in the next few months. You know, hopefully, especially once shovels meet ground and that kind of action starts going.
That'd be great. I'd love to come on.
Yeah, is there anywhere people can go right now to go check out more information?
So if you want to check out more information on the project, you can check out facebook.com/EPTrolley. Also, if you go to www.elpasotransnationaltrolley.tumblr.com, T-U-M-B-L-R, that's sort of a kind of a journal, an online journal of where this project, I started from with this project from 2010 onwards, so you can sort of see all the craziness that has happened with this project. And I think if you check sunmetro.org, they also should have some information.
They have a page as well.
Yeah, but it might be a little bit dated. But this is a tremendous opportunity. I really appreciate you guys like me.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All phlegmy and everything. Yeah. I love it. The SEO pack optimization.
Yeah.
Just ask Mariah.
Yeah, right. Just ask Mariah. Hit up those places for more information on the trolley. Update your SEO first before you do that. And then get your research on. And, you know, like we said, you know, it's just one more thing that's going to be added to downtown. There's all these projects that are in the works. People know about all these hotels, lofts, restaurants, more and things coming. So,
and thanks for coming back. Giving back.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you, guys.
Cool.
It's always been fun.
Awesome. All right. Well, that was Peter Schwarzmein with the Trolley Project, and we'll update with him, get back with him soon to get more updates. And aside from that, thank you guys for listening. Tune in
next. I Lean on Music.
Yes, I Lean on Music.
Download
their second
here.
Show. Yeah,
second show.
He's waiting to get on. There he is, waving.
Oh yeah, he's waving. There he is.
What's up, dude?
All right. Thanks for listening, you guys. Wait for the next show coming up. Ailey Music. No pity. That's how we do it every day here in the Sun City.